fiction.
Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and I got Mr. Gavin Stone.
Hello, glad to be back.
Yeah, hello. You know, you can run the show today. I just got back from a week work.
Ooh, yeah.
Then... And you've been sleeping all week. You've been just, like, doing your nails and...
I know. I'm having a really bad hair day, though, to be fair.
Oh.
That was below the belt, wasn't it?
That was. And eventually it'll... Don't worry. I don't get mad. I get even.
Oh, no doubt. I'm sure you'll get me back.
I'm calling up the Prime Minister right now. I've got him on speed dial. Anyway. Well, so we've got another one of your friends here. Someone that you have been beaten up by, I'm sure, several times.
More than likely.
Yeah. So now, she's an author, and her latest book, I see, is A New Game. And it's an L. Anderson series, and this is book 4, so it's a series. We'll get into that. So A.M. Adair, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I wasn't quite sure Gavin wanted to talk to me anymore after, you know, I talked to him once already. I figured I'd be shunned.
Oh, was it that bad?
I had a blast, so I
really enjoyed it.
I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It was like, you know, catching up and talking about the good old days. It was probably the most fun interview I've done for a while on my channel.
I'm not quite sure how much we got to anything, so, you know, substantive, but, you know, it was a lot of fun. Kind of, we ran with it.
Yeah.
Well, and so, you know, when I hear that term, the good old days, when that comes up from someone like Gavin or anybody, especially someone like you both have been in this, and let's say in the intelligence and the military and that side of the world, the modern world, do you think there is a good old days in reality, or is it just, It's just always the same. It's just the players change, but we always have struggles.
I think it's more the latter. As like when you refer to the good old days, you always look back at things with more fondness than you feel in the moment. Especially, you know, anything military. Chances are you were embracing the suck when it was happening, and then you turn around and you can laugh at it later because, you know, dark humor is one of the things we all use to cope. And so it becomes almost nostalgic, and it seems so much more enjoyable in hindsight than it was when you were actually going through it.
What do you think, in general, the public understands about, you know, intelligence communities, like anywhere from CIA to MI6 to any of these groups out there, and even military intelligence and counterintelligence and all this stuff? Do you think that if the general public kind of gets it right from watching Jack Reacher and all these other things, is it, or what do you think we miss?
Unfortunately, no. The general public doesn't get it, but that's okay. I mean, if they truly understood, then chances are, you know, we're probably doing something very wrong. There's this great meme that went around for the longest time that had all these different pictures on it. You know, it had somebody all kitted up looking super cool saying, you know, what Hollywood thinks intelligence does. And, you know, then there was another part of it that showed somebody like a complete nerd, like full on like glasses with a tape in the middle, the pocket protector, you know, typing away on a computer is like, and it says, you know, what the general public thinks that, you know, we do. And then at the end, it gets to like somebody sitting down with a PowerPoint presentation and said what we actually do. So it's, it depends on who you're talking to in the moment with what they think intelligence is. And truth be told, I think Hollywood actually does us a favor by making us seem so grandiose. It's a little bit of a punch in the gut anytime there's an intelligence failure and there's the backlash. But at the same time, the bad guys think that we can do all these grandiose things, and that's advantage us.
Right. Well, you know, I thought Gavin for the first long time was really, you know, Jack Reacher.
Wait, he's not?
You know. Yeah, well, I know. He tells everyone he is.
And
he
shows damn, now I'm disappointed.
Yeah, and the pictures he puts up on Zoom and different places, he just, oh, it's just my young sniveling little cousin, and I'm really this, and so I always thought he was like this big, huge machismo man, you know, and I don't know what to think now.
No, I'm a big wimp.
That's the best part about, you know, being in the intel community, is because you really never know. You never know who the real intel collector is. And that's the best place, you know, to be that, you know, gray man, and not necessarily like Mark Greene's gray man where you're an assassin out, you know, killing everybody, which would be super cool. But, you know, being the person that kind of disappears into the background that you would never look at twice.
But how do you write when you're writing stories around characters like this? How can you not make them like they are in general in Hollywood and books and stuff? Like, they're all kind of, you know, superstars in a way, right? You know, they can kill a whole troop in 5 minutes and not get a scratch, you know, and they look perfect and great boots and they have everything, right? They just, you know, they
perfect
have,
hair,
you know,
yes.
They have everything, even right down to Queen Latifah walks in a room with 10 guys. 5 minutes later, she walks out cleaning her teeth with her toothpick and everybody's dead, right? So it's like, and her hair's not even out of place. So with all of that, there's the real world conspiracy that you intelligence officers are doing all sorts of evil things to us. You know what I mean? Like, there's a real conspiracy, and it really came out during COVID. Like, oh, it's the CIA's in it, or every time it, you know, there's political corruption, without getting into any parties, it's always, oh, the CIA did that. It's, or the terrorist attack in Moscow recently. Oh, it's the CIA, obviously.
Well,
right?
It's like, I think it's because anything you don't understand or you don't have a full, you know, you don't have a grasp of, it's very easy to make it an all-knowing, all-seeing bad guy. You know, that's what all conspiracies thrive on, is the unknown and taking things that you fear and giving yourself a convenient answer for it. And, you know, I really wish I could be that nefarious and that much of a bad guy. But like you just heard, my maniacal laughter is just terrible. I was like, my supervillain status was pretty low, especially because I'm allergic to cats. So I can't do like the turn around petting the cat thing, you know. Very James Bond supervillain.
Ah, so that's where it's all going wrong. You need the cat.
No, because you can't do it with a puppy. It just takes away all your bad guy wasta if you use a puppy. But I do think it's just because we want to believe that there's something like somebody Machiavellian and pulling the strings, and it's easier to kind of grasp when things don't go the way that we anticipate they should, if there's a villain behind it. And so somebody like the CIA, you know, is an easy scapegoat because they're so secretive, even on things they don't need to be secretive about. So it makes them a convenient punching bag.
Well, and so are you continuing that style of writing in your books?
Not intentionally, I would say. It's like, it's fiction. I am writing fiction. Now, it is informed by reality, and I like to make it have all those notes that make it feel real and genuine and like it's something that could actually happen. But then at the end of the day, it is fiction, and it's meant for entertainment. So there's going to be grandiose moments, but that's why I write fiction and not nonfiction. If we wrote exactly what happens on an intelligence operation at any given time, people would stop turning pages after like page three. Like, it'd be so dry and so boring. It's like all intelligence operations tend to be like 75% admin and like report writing or reading, and like 25% cool guy stuff. So that doesn't make for a good novel. So if you're going to write something that's meant for entertainment, you got to kind of flip the script a bit.
Right. So do you actually take in a lot of your history and what you've done in your different jobs? Do you actually take some of that, and does it influence what you do, right?
It absolutely does. It'd be almost impossible for me to not draw on my life experiences, which in a lot of cases, most people would not believe. It could almost be a story itself, but you know, the truth is always stranger than fiction. And so I'm not certain anybody would believe it. I say, no, this is what really happened. But it does make for great fodder to inform my story. So it just fleshes out a world for me where I'm able to, for example, if somebody's fast roping out of a helicopter, I know how to do that. I have done it myself. So I can add in those little details to make it feel real. And, you know, how to put together an intelligence package, how to do an interrogation, like all of those types of things I can draw real world experience from and put it into a fictional story.
So let's talk about this series. And so who is L. Anderson?
So I like to joke that L. Anderson is my, you know, alter ego. Like if I could, kind of like Lee Child once said that, you know, Jack Reacher kind of did all the things he could never do and get away with. I like to think L is like that, you know, just somebody like in those what if scenarios, like if, what if, you know, I was not hampered by the same morals, ethics, and rules as I was, you know, what could have been. And so that kind of became the genesis for the character, and which also makes it a lot of fun to write. So every time I think, right, you know what, I would really like to punch that person in the face, L can do that, you know?
Yeah, you probably really do. I know.
I can maintain plausible deniability.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was just, you know, because you're bad guys and stuff, right? Because mm-hmm. obviously L is the one that's doing the good, trying to have good things happen. So you must have people doing bad things and trying to hurt people and do bad things. And so when you do that, I'd imagine that those bad characters, where do they come from, right? Like, you know, you kind of designed L after you a little bit, or mm-hmm. definitely because you're the author, you're somewhat in her. So your bad guy, is that like Gavin?
Absolutely. You found me out. There was my first main villain was actually modeled completely after Gavin.
Yeah, just without the screw ups. That's why I could never be a bad guy, because I just screw everything up too much.
Like, truth be told, there's a little bit of me in all the characters. Like, I have, you know, I have my protagonist, but then I have the supporting cast of like a team that supports her, and there's bits and pieces of me in each of them and in the bad guys. So it's a very therapeutic way to explore, you know, kind of darker impulses, darker thoughts. You know, anybody who's dealt with PTSD, you tend to go down rabbit holes. And so writing's very therapeutic in that regard. But even the bad guys have some traits that I've either crushed down in myself or have witnessed in people around me. So that, again, kind of adds that realism to them, and it makes them all more personal to me.
But not allergic to cats.
Not allergic to cats. You know, I have not done an allergic to cats character yet, so I do feel like I'm lacking in that regard.
Yeah, and we need to get that in the next book. So last time we spoke, I remember we had this conversation about continuity, and we talked about things that kind of get to people. Like, I think it was you that said you read a book once where you know the character pulled back the hammer on the Glock, and you were going.
Yeah. And going, I think everybody has one of those moments.
Yeah, because I saw a post recently, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been Mark Graney, but it was on about one of these experts, we'll call them, decided to send him an email going on about all the things he'd got wrong in his book about a particular firearm. And I thought to myself, I wonder if that's why sometimes they do it, is to get the buzz and get people talking. And I thought to myself, you know, wouldn't it be good to put something in like that deliberately just to make it become an internet sensation? So have you ever done that, deliberately put something in that you know is wrong just to wind your audience up a little bit?
Yeah, it's going to be super tempting to do that now. The thought hadn't occurred to me before, but now I'm really tempted. I think thriller authors might have this more than anybody else. And I think it's just because we have so many toys in our stories, especially when it comes to firearms and it comes to tech. There are people who are like rabid fans about the details and getting the nomenclature right and all the specifics. So like Mark Greene's got some great stories, like at like,
oh yeah,
like a decimal point got moved during copy edit. It wasn't even something he even wrote, but he still gets emails from it like a decade later. I think he just had something where somebody wrote him a long email, like bashing his publisher and editor for.
Yeah, that was the
including
one.
Including the 2011. Yeah, like that. Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah,
yeah. He's like, this gun doesn't exist. I'm like, oh, actually, it does. It's pretty sweet, but like long diatribe about how this weapon does not exist. I'm like, you might want to try Google.
Yeah. But, oh, dear,
I think that happens to thriller authors more than anybody else. So you don't even need to make something up to cause controversy. Somebody is going to find something in your book that is going to just raise their hackles, and they're going to let you know about it.
Oh, yeah. I remember doing my masterclass with Dan Brown, and he was, which book was it? It was not the one with the angels, it was the other one, Inferno. And it was all about the, because that's one of my favourite fiction novels of all time, Inferno. And he was on about the fact that there was a museum and they were running through a particular museum and he got everything right up the stairs onto the landing and blah, blah, blah. And he put, they went in through a toilet door on the left. And he had that many people write to him saying, that toilet door's on the right, not on the left. And wow, they're all out there.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that was me.
Was it you?
But I say, I've had people, like, I know you're not supposed to read your reviews, but I do, but I take them more as data points. So whenever somebody writes how they felt about it, even if it's not a constructive criticism, I can still take it as a data point. Was there something about the story that is just not sinking in or is causing friction?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, you know, what people write are more a reflection on themselves than your story. But even so, I had people were like telling me that, like, in my first book, I described Baghdad International Airport, telling me I was completely off in the descriptions. And obviously I'd never been there. I'm like, actually, yes, I have many times. I question whether or not you've been there, like things that like that, that, and, you know, inevitably somebody hasn't read my bio before they decide to trash me and tell me I have no idea what I'm talking about and that he does not know what he is talking about, obviously has never done this. Oh, yes, my precious. You do have to kind of chuckle about it. I'm like, man, it's like you took all that time, write this. If you know, maybe 5 seconds, you could have figured out that maybe you were a little off target.
Yeah, just type my name into Google and you'll find out, you know, there's my bio and you can see for yourself.
Yeah, I think it's interesting the perspectives you can get from people who viscerally hate your work. And it's always fun to see how they translate what you write as in being who you are as an individual and as, you know, what your beliefs and what your perspectives must be. Apparently, they don't understand the concept of fiction.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. I'm sure you've had the same thing, Alan.
Oh, me, awesome. I do all the time. Yeah. You know, but I hunt them down. You know, I find their locations and then I hunt them down, go to their house, scream at them.
See, now this is why he keeps you around, Gavin. He's just buttering you up so that way you can use your intel skills to go and help him find his lipstick list.
Yeah.
That must be what it is. Well, and now we've got a trio. Now that he's got your email as well, that's it. There'll be no stopping us.
I'm in. I guess I do take it all with a grain of salt. And it's like, just like with any art, you know, it's subjective. So no matter how much blood, sweat, and tears you put into something, you could think it's the greatest thing ever. Somebody's going to turn around and go, that's trash. Why did you do that? And, you know, you just have to let it go. It's like not everybody has the same taste in art or in creative outlets. And so you can't expect everybody to jump up and down. It's great. This is the greatest story I've ever heard in my life or read in my life. And that's okay.
Yeah, you've just given me an inspiration as well. You know, us three, we should do a book called The Book Club, but instead of for readers, it's a book based on authors that get together and they look at their worst reviews and they hire a hitman to go around killing them all. And yeah.
Well, he just spoiler alert, man, you should have held on to that part. Leave everybody in suspense.
Oh yeah, that's it. What can I say? I'm new to the game.
Yeah. There you go. No, I actually don't look at mine anymore. I don't. I when I go to Amazon or I go to Goodreads or anything like that, I can. It's got your name and it's got you how many books and how many reviews, and I look at the overall. So mm-hmm. if you got like a couple thousand, and then it goes 4 out of 5 stars is your average. Good enough.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's all I need. You know, I give myself a 3-star, so if I'm above what I give myself.
Nice. I like it.
I can't be that bad. No, I can't. You can't worry about it. It's just, you got to do what you can and go for it. Well, did you come up with Ella?
L?
Was L the first thought in your mind, like developing that character and then the stories that you're going to put her in, or did you have kind of a thought of what was happening, like a story, and then you developed Elle to fit or work in that story?
It was more the latter. So I had an experience, and I've told this story before, so I'll try to truncate it for those who've heard it, but it was on my last deployment in Iraq, and we were in a convoy that was going out of the green zone into the red zone. So for those who don't know, going out of relative safety into the, you don't want to go here part of Baghdad. Mm-hmm. And we were being escorted by the Iraqis. So, you know, pucker factor's a little higher. And we turned down a very dark, very secluded road. And all the hair on the back of my neck just stood right up. You know, you kind of, you hold your weapon a little closer, you start looking a little harder, but in that moment, I had a bunch of what-if scenarios start just running through my head. Most of them terrible, but because of that, I started thinking about, okay, what would I do? And then in the creative part of me just started going, okay, if I could do anything I wanted, what would I do? And that was kind of the genesis of the character. You know, eventually when I sat down to finally start writing the story, I gave myself a character that could do whatever it was I wanted to do, but was restricted from for one reason or another. So it really was the event drove the character, and that feeling made it into the first book. And one of the what-ifs made it into the first book, just not necessarily the scene with the convoy.
So what's your relationship like with Elle? And I say that as when you are writing Elle, are you hearing her voice? Do you see it like a movie? Is it like a, like, I get several types of descriptions from writers. Like some say it's like my sister, it's like my kid, it's like my friend. You know, they hear voices, some see them in movies, some, you know, all these different things. What's your experience?
You know, it's kind of funny you say that. Most people tell me they hear me when they read Elle or see my mannerisms. But when I'm writing her, I'm along for the ride. I am generally surprised by what she does. And I think that's what makes it so interesting for me to keep writing her. She's cathartic for me. So in a lot of cases, that is what I'm thinking, is like that this kind of character would be able to do the things that I could only think about doing. And I let that play out on the page. And say, I can honestly say I have a general framework for how each of my books are going to go. But how I get from point A to point B has been a surprise every single time I've sat down to write. And truthfully, I thought I was done with Elle after my third book, but she was not done with me. So hence book 4 became a reality. And in book 4, I tried to do a back and forth, you know, two protagonists, essentially, one chapter devoted to Elle and one chapter devoted to a former supporting cast member, now a main cast member. My intent was to have him take over the series and have the story be his next. But as I said, Hell was not done with me. So she ended up running with the story a lot more than I anticipated, which I enjoyed thoroughly. It was a surprise how it all turned out.
So these stories that you're putting her through, are they, is it modern day stories happening today in this state, or is it past tense?
Yes, there, it's modern. So obviously when I started my first book, it was a few years ago. But I've been writing in present day with each iteration. So with the last two, they've been stateside, which has been a whole lot of fun for me because I started off writing overseas for my first two books, and then I brought it all back home. And it's been fun to be able to do something different. You know, I kind of drew on all the sites and locations that I had visited over my service time. And I kind of thought I would keep doing international stuff, but then the story just was served better by coming home. And of course, then I blew a bunch of stuff up, which was really fun as well. Yeah. Having firsthand knowledge and lived and breathed in a lot of the locations that I set my story in almost made the characters more real for me.
Are we allowed to mention your novella at all that you've got coming up?
Yeah, we can mention the title for it. Book four does end on a bit of a cliffhanger. And I don't want fans of the series to think that I'm just going to leave it at that. There will be more L. Anderson, but there's going to be a delay. So that I don't anticipate the next book in the series coming out until next year, probably late next year. But in the meantime, I do have a novella and a short story that will be coming out in the fall. So, and before anybody gets their hopes up too much, they are not in the same world. And as a matter of fact, not even really the same genre. My novella is a psychological thriller, and my short story, brace for it, is actually horror suspense.
No.
Yeah. It was fun to take on the challenge. You know, not only creating new worlds and new characters, but particularly with the short story, I had to do it and keep it under 4,000 words. So that was something I hadn't done before. So new genre, new characters, and oh, by the way, you have a word count limit. Good luck.
It was... I've read it, and it, you know, when you see these things that you know, you see these kind of gripping right from the start, says, you know, blah blah blah. It actually really was from the very first moment you start reading, straight away you want to know what's going on and what's coming next. And I read the whole lot in one sitting. It was brilliant. So, but yeah, we'll leave it at that for now, and get back to doing L. Anderson.
Yep. What I will say is my novella is coming out through Silverback Publishing, and it's this incredible group of guys who got together, and they found this niche in kind of the writing community where a lot of authors have great story ideas that might not make a novel but would make a great novella, but then publishers aren't interested in putting out novellas. And unless you're a big name who's... Mm-hmm. You know, doing it in addition to something else, you know, chances are you're going to get poo-pooed if, you know, you're like, hey, I got an idea for a novella. Oh, by the way, it's not connected to my main series. Well, Silverback wanted to take advantage of all the ideas that keep popping around in a lot of our heads that, you know, never make it. Well, no.
Great concept.
Yeah. And they took that and then they're doing like kind of making it interactive with the reader. So you can... help pick the covers. You can get advanced looks, inside looks. You could potentially have your name put into the books. You know, they give you exclusive content with the author. So it's a really, really cool concept if you're a reader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome to be a part of it. And I'm really excited that, you know, I'm going to be working with these guys to get the novella out. But in the meantime, you know, we're working on Steve Stratton's novel right now. That one's the next one to be published, so all props to Steve and a victorious release on his part, and then everything's going to be shifting over to me.
Well, hey, yeah. There you go. It's all about you. Listen, do you have a subtext, a meaning behind each one of these stories in this series, or is this purely action, entertainment, and that's it?
You know, as much as I would love to say it's just purely action and entertainment, there are a lot of underlying questions. So, you know, I think the one I play with the most is, you know, the concept of the ends justifies the means. What is too far? You know, when does doing the right thing become the wrong thing, or doing the wrong thing for the right reasons, when does it cross that line? So I play in that gray area a lot in my stories because I find it fascinating. And so it's something that, like, especially the L.A. Anderson series, you know, my characters definitely, let's just say, high functioning sociopath. That's probably the best way to put it. So,
female version of Gabby.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking when you were on about that gray area, I was thinking, yeah, that's because that's where intelligence officers live.
Essentially. So now you give you a covert operative, you know, who does black ops, and you hit that they live in that gray area. You know, what could possibly go wrong? So, you know, those kind of questions of, you know, is, you know, murder, is deception, is, you know, manipulation, are all of these things acceptable if the ends are worthy? If, you know, you, at the end of the day, if you think your cause, or if you're saving lives, is it okay? And so that's kind of the underlying subtext and theme behind the series.
Do you think, let's just say, do you have to be kind of cautious on what you do talk about in one of the books in the series, because, you know, things are so heated in today's world politically and military and agencies and stuff like that? Do you kind of really stay away from certain events or ideas?
I have shied away from coming straight out and being explicit with some things, but it really hasn't been because I was trying not to do something that was potentially inflammatory, even though I've inadvertently done it. It was more because it just didn't serve the story. So I didn't feel the need to put in anything that would pull away focus from the way the story was already unfolding. Really, the only thing I ever pay attention to is I'm very careful about when I talk about tactics, techniques, and procedures, and I intentionally shy away from using specific nomenclature or going into any details on, like, tech or essentially anything that could be construed as something I did while I was on active duty. Because then all of my manuscripts, everything gets turned over to the Pentagon for a review. And so I just want to make it super easy for those guys to not have to turn around and tell me to redact something.
Right, right.
I chuck it all in. I've said my plan from the beginning was to try and get it banned. And I thought, because if it gets banned, it'll go straight to number one and it'll hit the headlines. It'd be the best thing that could ever happen for me. And unfortunately, despite making revelations about the Freemasons and all sorts of things, it didn't get banned and nobody got upset. So, you know, I'm trying harder with book two. I'm really going to do some damage this time.
Well, all you have to do is make sure you say something bad about Taylor Swift and you're probably gold.
Yeah.
That's where I've been going.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Right. Now I know.
Do a slam on Taylor or something like that, and you got it.
There you go. You'll go viral in a heartbeat. Might not be for the good.
I'm upsetting the wrong people, then, aren't I? I'm trying to annoy, like, the US and British governments, but no, they're just taking no notice because I think they're probably used to me by now. If I'd have gone down the route of Taylor Swift, then, you know, I'd have been in the headlines by then. Yeah. Hear me. Yeah. Well, I should have called you first.
Yeah. Yeah, just, you know, do something like that. Come on. Listen, so who have you killed that you know in your books?
Ooh. This feels like one of those plausible deniability moments.
we want names and phone numbers. We're going to get them on the other line and have a conversation about it. Why you felt the need to have them terminated in such a bad way in your book.
I think this way it keeps me out of legal jeopardy if I just say, you know what, it's entirely made up.
So everybody, if you look for Gavin Stone in book 5, getting slaughtered by L. Anderson.
The people that meet their demise may have been influenced by, you know, people who have been in my life. It's like, I think it was Josh Hood who said it, you know, that he was out at the store and somebody was just being a complete jerk to, like, the person behind the counter. I think he was getting donuts or something like that. But as he's sitting there, he didn't say anything. He's just in his head. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm killing this guy in the next book. It's like taking in all the details. It's like, and that's something you can do as a writer. It's like, you know, if anybody were to say that in real life, you know, you would be canceled. You would be in a whole lot of trouble, but you put it in the pages of a story with, let's say, an action hero, and it's expected. And so it's not only okay, it's vindicating.
There you go. See, now we know what to do here. We're getting book two for Gavin here ready.
we'll help you come up with your target list. Don't worry, we got you.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be a serial killer book then, isn't it? We're just going from one to another, popping off all the people we don't like.
You know what? Everybody likes a good serial killer story. You can't say they don't.
Yes. I'm detecting a theme now. I'm just wondering about this whole book club thing where we just go around killing all the people. Yeah, it is kind of getting a bit, it's come up a few times. I think maybe the next book convention, instead of promoting books, all the authors just get together and just decide who we want to kill.
Was it Thriller Fest this year? They actually had kind of like a running gag about that, like, you know, how not to get killed at a thriller convention or a writer's convention. Because you think about it, you know, between mystery writers and thriller writers, they probably researched about every way you could probably kill somebody and get away with it. So, I mean, if the FBI is listening right now, I swear it was research.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, it is a fun idea. And, you know, I'm certain somebody's kind of played with it a little bit, but I don't know if that might be a good anthology. How would you take out your competition at a conference?
You see, you're going to have them all be very British, you know, where they all have a deck of cards and they all get one card in there, and the Jack and the King, or the, you know, or the Ace is the person that has to do the murder, and whoever gets like the Jack is the one that gets killed or something.
Oh, that'd be fun. And
everyone draws and nobody knows who's doing what.
That could be a fun game.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, you know.
Anyway, these types of things have always been things that have fascinated me, though. So I guess, you know, we're all probably in the same kind of club where we really enjoy things that not only pique your interest, but, you know, get your adrenaline pumping. So, you know, thrillers were a natural fit for me.
Yeah, I like to go meet killers and write their stories.
There you go.
And ask them how they did it, and they tell me.
So are you just compiling this to build a how-to manual, are you?
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the for dummies section, you're going to be qualified to write the, you know, murder for dummies. You get these manuals that teach you how to, you know, plumbing for dummies and, you know, roofing for dummies, gardening for dummies. Yeah, Alan's going to be doing a kind of murder for dummies book, I reckon, in the next couple of years.
Well, yeah, it's needed. I mean,
is it going to have pop-ups?
It's important. Well, of course, we want to have some fun while we do it, right? And, and there will be a little board game for the first 100 buyers, and you can play. It's like Monopoly. You go around and you know, off people in different places and locations and see if you can get away with it.
I'm liking where this is going.
Very creative. You know?
Do not pass go. Go back to jail.
Oh.
Yeah. You've been caught.
Oh. You've been caught, yeah.
Monopoly or Murder Edition.
The Murder Edition. And it was like, I was going to say, and you can get the Trump card and you get out of jail free.
That was a softball joke. I'd have been disappointed if you hadn't taken that one.
It was just too easy, you know.
Yeah.
To say.
Low-hanging fruit.
Don't get me excited here. So when you are writing this, like when you started book one, right? Did you know it was going to be four and you're talking five? Like, do you kind of, so in your mind, did you kind of already know where you were going to go over four or five books, or did you just, is it just come as it goes? You know,
honestly, when I first started writing, I just wanted to write. I just wanted to see where I could go with it. I had a vague idea about three storylines. So, or three parts of an overall story. So I guess you could say I had the idea for three books at the get-go. But when I started writing, I just really wanted to write the story. I had zero intention of doing anything more than that. But then when I got to the end, I was like, well, let's see what this publishing thing's about, and started doing the research on that, you know, I did the typical nerd thing. I went and got a book and I read about, you know, what it takes to get an agent and query letters and the publishing process and all that fun stuff. And I got an agent and then I deployed because I was still active duty at the time and I kind of forgot about it. I know that sounds weird, but, you know, things are a little bit different when you're deployed and your focus is elsewhere. But when I was on deployment, I noticed everybody was reading on a, you know, a Kindle or a Nook or some type of e-reader, and nobody was really carting around books anymore, and kind of went back to what I knew about independent publishing. I was, well, you know what? I could do this right now and stop the querying process, like, you know, the rejection process, I should say, of, you know, having all the traditional publishing houses go, yeah, it's great, not right now. So I asked my agent, you know, hey, can we go ahead and do this? And he said, yes. Luckily, he had a small company where he helps writers put together a nice finished product if they're going to do it on their own, and partnered up with him. And that's how the series got published. And, you know, when I went to start the second book, I was feeling pretty good about myself because during the process of the first one, I learned a lot. You know, I got my teeth kicked in quite a few times. I finally got to the editor I still use to this day, who is a goddess. She's evil, but she's a goddess. and she whooped my ass. And so I got a little cocky with book two and thought, I got this. And I turned in my first manuscript of book two, having a little swagger, and it came back with, like, dripping and metaphoric red ink. I felt that punch go all the way through my stomach to the spine. I kind of curled up underneath my desk in the fetal position for a little while and just kind of whimpered. And then I got back to it. So, you know, she got me through the sophomore slump. So, and by the time the third book came around, you know, I was tentatively hopeful instead of cocky that I finally figured this out. And I was stunned when she came back and she only cut like 5,000 words, which if you knew my editor is like unreal. And she's like, why don't you add some here? I'm like, really? Holy crap. So wow. And then I thought it was done. Like I mentioned earlier, my characters were not done with me. So then right. That's how right. The fourth book and what will be the fifth book came to be, is I had a whole new storyline pop into my head within the world of my characters, where I really thought one of my secondary characters was going to become my main protagonist. That was how I went into it, thinking I was going to have Elle Anderson and Julian Saunders, who's the other character. I thought I was really going to kind of pivot towards him, and it was going to be much heavier towards him. But yeah, Elle wasn't having that. So it ended up being about 50-50.
The characters aren't giving up with you, as you say. Do you tell your therapist this?
I have a great coffee mug that says, I know the voices in my head aren't real, but damn, they have some good ideas. That's kind of what I equate this wondering. Is.
Yeah. But I was just wondering, you know, if you tell your therapist, you might not be able to drive anymore.
Well, and, actually, my therapist already knows I'm certifiable. They knew that going in. So I think we're on a good, you know, solid standing.
Well, if she's tied up in the basement.
Hey,
you know.
Details. He said I was okay.
Yeah, that's it. Throw her some raw meat once a day.
I let her have a vegetable or two. I am not completely heartless.
Yeah, you're a modern kidnapper.
Yep, give her some fruit. She can't get scurvy. We're good.
Oh, how sweet. What a sweet girl. My God. And so listen, in the new world, are you in social media? Do you have website? Do you do where do people find?
I have a website. It's amadare.com, and all my social media is linked there, so it makes it super easy. But as much as it pains me still, and I know Gavin and I talked about this, I still get anxiety every time I post something, just because, you know, couple of decades in the intelligence community, you get used to not doing things that, you know, go out to the public and make you stand out. But when you do something like become an author, if you're not available to people who are interested in your work, you don't exist. So yeah, I'm on Instagram and what is it now? X and Facebook, Threads. Yeah, I have not succumbed to TikTok. I don't think I'm going to succumb to TikTok. That's like my last battle.
Live the dream. Jump into TikTok. It's just, I just do the same thing on all of them. So it's just a show or books and stuff like that and funny jokes and that's it. It's good. Most people interact good and you get some nutballs and that's okay too.
I thought my kind of nutball would be all right with you. I know cyber stalking's wrong, but your dad jokes are just too good.
Yeah. Yeah, and, I would just, I welcome them. I just tell them. I give them one of the other's address, like Gavin's or somebody.
Oh, brilliant. I'm going to start doing that.
That's why I have to keep moving.
Oh, and it's funny, and you get the ones that do stuff like, love you long time. You're so good sounding to me. You're such a good person. Why don't you friend me? I always tag Gavin. I always say, try Gavin. He's got a Jaguar. I'm broke.
I go by Gavin another place.
Yeah, that's what I do. I tag the different hosts. I take turns, and I always tell them, oh, no, I'm broke. I have no money and I'm a loser. But Gavin's got a brand new Jaguar. And he's a good looking man. Big, big, huge wanker. You got to, and then I tag him. And they're so, have at it.
He actually does, however. They never contact me, so whether they're just looking at my picture and going, oh, no, I don't know what he sees in that guy, or not, I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, what you need to do is tell him that the picture is just his cover ID. It's not what he really looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm much uglier in real life.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. Terrible stuff. Well, we'll have all of your good stuff, your information, the book, website, everything up on ours. People can find it, one click, and be taken into the world of L. Anderson. Ooh. So, our guest, the writer of these four books, A.M. Adair, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, gents. This has been fun.
This has been a production of the House of Mystery Radio Show. To find out more about our show, guests, or hosts, go to our website at houseofmysteryradio.com.